everybody, and welcome to today's Grower Talks podcast. I'm Chris Bates, editor-in-chief of Grower Talks, Green Profit, and the newsletter Acres Online. And today we're talking poinsettias, specifically the best poinsettias, best for specific purposes that growers and retailers are asking for, like timing, color, the market, the region you're growing in, the pot size or the habit that you need. If you can request it from your poinsettia supplier, we're going to see if we can cover it and give you an idea for it. Now, my guest experts who you've been looking at there, they are all poinsettia experts with a combined more than 101 years. Steve would only commit to more than 40. Gary's feeling old. Becca's the rookie of the group with just 20 years of experience between them. My guest experts are Rebecca Simons. Am I pronouncing that right, Rebecca?
That's good enough.
Good enough. Rebecca from Express Seed, Gary Vollmer from Selecta One, and really the Ball Horticultural Company in general there, and Steve Reinhart of Reinhart Poinsettias and also Express Seed. All right, let's move into some colors now. Again, quickly, best white. Best white overall, and then the whitest white. Rebecca, insert eye roll.
that was me with the eye roll, because we just have to remember that consumers are not going to see 15 whites lined up. They don't get to choose between 15 whites. They get to choose one white at retail. And so I think oftentimes we spend a lot of time chasing the purest white bract when, you know, the reality is the consumer doesn't get to see all those together. But for me, you know, White Star was the standard white for so many years. Mm-hmm. And now we have Jack Frost, which is the most kind of White Star like in terms of vigor and growth habits, good for painting. You know, it works for all applications, but it's a pure white bract. So for me, Jack Frost.
All right, Steve.
Well, when you talk about this category, you also need to layer in best against botrytis as well, because there's a lot of white whites that don't survive the botrytis test. So
that's because the bract is thinner. Is that? Do I have that right? The white bract is thinner. Oh, and the leaf is too.
Yeah.
That makes them more susceptible to botrytis.
Yeah, and how much
and calcium it shows.
Is in there. Yeah.
It shows against the white collar too. So, but at any rate, Jack Frost for me as well would be the choice. I think it's out there in the market, and I think it's a good one.
All right, Gary.
In that vigor point, I would agree. Jack Frost is rock solid, and probably as you look at the, you know, if you want to use the term loosely, white whites in the world. Ultimately has some of the best strength characteristics of it. Mm-hmm. Doesn't fit container sizes that we need, and timing can be variable regionally, but it's the best we have at this moment. But I think the thing is as I've seen the evolution, and I know what the breeders are working towards, is the concept of improved bred whites, these new whiter whites, white seedlings versus a sport white. There will be much better whites coming. Jack Frost was like the first, and Lazare comes in with Alpena Alaska. Jack Frost comes in. Now the world is seeing where white poinsettias, the rest of us are chasing with products that still have the problems that pure white poinsettias have. I think the future is going to change that dramatically.
All right.
So I would say in the next 3 to 4 years, you'll see much stronger pure white type poinsettias or white ceiling based poinsettias.
All right. Something to look forward to. Gary, what's the prettiest pink in your mind in the market?
Well, you got to go to the poinsettia to get the prettiest pink, and that's it's something that we don't have in traditional poinsettia, but I think working towards to be able to unleash that pigment profile in a traditional large bracted poinsettia is a goal. We're working on something. But that, and then if you go to, you know, from a traditional poinsettia type of product, it would have to be polyspink, early polyspink. We're working on a new one to go after that color. That hot pink is important. But we want to try to find a real plant. They all have their Achilles heels. We want to find one that's going to be durable, branches don't break, et cetera, et cetera.
All right, Steve, you mentioned Polly's Pink earlier. What's your
I know, pink? I know. I agree with Gary. I mean, I think I agree that Poinsettia sets a standard. Love You Pink sets a standard. But yeah, in a traditional poinsettia, Polly's Pink is kind of where you want to go.
All right. We won't get into why they're all euphorbias, but we can't get that pink out of the euphorbias into our pulcheremas. Why we can't make that happen.
In another time. Another let the time. Wizards do their work.
Rebecca, you're prettiest
well, I'm
pink.
Going to. Yeah, I'm going a different direction. We get some feedback once in a while from retailers about the hot pinks like Polly's and Carina that consumers don't. Sometimes it looks like a faded red at retail. It doesn't necessarily look like a traditional pink, and they're looking for traditional pink. So for me, I still like Mars Pink a lot. It's got kind of a cool two-tone, maybe call it grandma pink color if you want. But, you know, if I was out looking for a traditional pink poinsettia, that's what I would choose.
All right, well,
I would agree.
Go
historically,
nice.
20 years of performance, Mars Pink was the standard that everybody was breeding towards and trying to achieve, trying to find an earlier version. Mars Pink, I would agree with you historically.
Rebecca, how about your marbliest marble?
Oh, there's a new one out from, there's a new one out from Lansbury called Amarina Early Glitter that is pretty darn cool. It's got just a really cool splash pattern to it. So first I would say Amarina and then Superba New Glitter is really the standard in glitter types.
All right. Gary?
Glitter or marble? So marble, Early Elegance marble, glitter, definitely Superba New Glitter. Superba New Glitter is the bar for glitter.
All right, Steve?
I agree. I mean, traditionally, Marlborough was grown, but I think that I'd agree with the group here.
All right. Well, a lot of red and white combo pots being grown now. Gary, what variety do you like best? For red and white?
Our top red white, and we have a lot of the market with it, is a Joy family, Joy Red and Joy White, and it works really good. It's been working in. The original footprint was a small, unpinched 10-inch bowl for four plants, two red, two white. But we've seen it scale up for several retailers into larger pots, and it's now Costco's entering in most markets this year with a red-white large pot as well. Joy Red and White is our anchor in that arena.
All right, Steve?
I mean, Lattery has done a great job in this category, I got to say. And so take your pick from Lattery almost, you know. But also traditionally, you know, red glitter that Ecky had, as far as maybe the aesthetics, not the most bright, but the strength of that plant was incredible. So red glitter, I would say, is not to be left out.
All right, Rebecca?
I would add, so I like Joy for early. That's really the standard for early combos. If you need late, Leona is a good option, too, from Beacon Camp. That makes a really nice red-white
combo. Leona Red and Leona White?
Yep, there's Leona Red and White, and it just has the nice, it's got nice habit. A lot of times that container size is, there is non-pinched grown as well, and Leona works well for that.
All right. There are not a lot of good white options late that can be matched to a red. That's the reality is. Yeah. Reds are independent, or later whites are independent whites. And so, that's a good point. That's a very good point.
Yeah. What is the best color family and broadest out there right now in the marketplace? Where it's a true series, or as close as you can get.
Beauty is the broadest, right? Yeah. I mean, there's probably the most beauty grown. Just like all families, the novelties are a little bit more compact and time a little bit differently, but that's pretty typical when you're using a family for sports. I typically recommend beauty for a grower that's looking for multiple colors in that timing and need, combo pots and things like that. Steve also mentioned the Lattery stuff. I think Superba is a really good family also.
Okay. Gary?
Yeah, I would say definitely as far as a family for us, beauty is that, and beauty is giving us continues to give us more interesting colors down a certain path. But I will tell you, when you go down that glittery type sport path, I was at Lazare back in early December, and I got to peek into the back room, and I can tell you that Superba family is throwing unbelievable amount of unique patterns. The question is as we always see this with the unique patterns, is can they create an elite channel and do selections to keep them stable? But I can tell you, that's the craziest stuff I've seen in coming out of one family would be mm-hmm. all the patterns out of Superba family. So right. Kudos to that.
All right. Steve, did I hit you up with that question?
No, I just agree. I mean, it's Beauty's got the widest collection of colors.
All right. Now. And Gary, you mentioned unusual novelties. What's on the market today? What is your favorite oddball novelty?
Well, right now, my favorite oddball novelty is Autumn Leaves, just because the color has gotten so much power, and it's a true novelty because it's multi-shaded. I don't like the plant. What we're working on is we are launching is sky types. We've gotten to the point of first cracks of these have been very challenging from a stability perspective and a timing perspective.
But explain what a sky type is.
So it's spotted. It's basically it's a red bract with white spots, very much like a sky type petunia, very similar type of pattern. It's all sported out of a grower in Germany, and so through selection process, we've gotten it earlier. We've gotten it more stable. We've been now adding new colors into this as well. And now we're going to do a bunch of cultural regimes to figure out how to actually manage it. But it's different. It's a plant grows differently, so it's going to have some hurdles. But what we're trying to do, and I know others are as well, is to find something that we haven't seen before. And that's where I get Lazare in that Superba family. There's patterns and combinations of colors and novel patterns that we haven't seen before. And
sure. Well, that's what
we have an old saying. We have an old saying is we talk about the novelties and we sell reds, but you've got to have a novelty to be in the conversation.
All right.
That's just kind of the reality of out in the world.
Steve, yeah. Your favorite novelty that's currently on the market?
My favorite.
And then, do you have anything in your back room?
You know, I tell you, there is a plant that Fiesta Sunrise that's not on the market that has caused me so much attention. And we did a special thing with Widener's years back, and that thing has stuck. And it's a gold with jingle, but it's not ready for the market. And so, but the marketplace really responds to it, and you get it in front of people. I get requests all the time, but we really can't produce it. So that's the most unusual and different and demanded.
Now, what's it called again?
Fiesta Sunrise.
All right. Yeah. We'll give Steve's address after this.
Yeah, right.
Come on, that's 50 cuttings, Steve. Come on.
Right,
Rebecca,
right.
Rebecca, your favorite.
Oh, Christmas Mouse. I love Christmas Mouse.
My gosh.
I think it's so cute. I know. I mean, you can tell I'm...
I was hoping that didn't come up.
I'm the girl of the bunch. I can't help it. It's just like with the right marketing, and it's a cute little variety. I mean, I'm a lover of novelties.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, the POP with the little mouse with the hat on really helps, doesn't it?
Yes. Yep.
Yeah. All right. I'm going to skip. We had a couple categories, but I think we've already kind of touched on them. Lastly, my own categories, the points that are from another breeder that you wish was in your selection. Rebecca, we'll start with you. What
Kayla,
do you wish that your guys had bred?
Kayla, hands down. I think, you know, I think Kayla's just a really fantastic variety. It's beautiful for one, and it works in all regions, and it's just really versatile. And so for me, it's Kayla.
Who's that one bred by? We'll give him some props.
So that's Beacon Camp. Yep, that's Beacon Camp.
All right. Gary, you gave a thumbs up.
Absolutely, without question. Kayla fits the some highly desirable production points, ideally suited for, you know, won't work your 10-inch, but it can run the gambit of all the medium to small pot sizes, so you get high utilization of a variety. Ramp it right down to minis. The timing, the dark red color, the good-looking bract, all of that checks
All right,
Steve. High priority boxes. Let's put it that way. Yeah.
You can't say ranch red, Steve, because you bred that one.
Yeah. For me, I went a little bit different direction, thinking that through history, there's only been a handful of varieties that have really risen to the volume, the dominant volume category. And so that was Hag in its day. It was Freedom. It was Prestige. Prestige held 50% of the space and stock at one time. It was incredible what that did. So in today's world, what is that variety? I don't know. I think Beauty's a pretty good variety headed down toward that high volume category. So I would say Beauty.
All right. Along those same lines then, what's an old variety that you wish you could bring back, Steve? And it's not that you can't. I mean,
for me?
It's nothing that says you can't. You need stock, right? So,
well, again, I would say back to Renaissance. I love that thing, and then I would have a second, if I can have a second, and that's Visions of Grandeur. And so I love those two. So
yeah.
All right, so. Rebecca, what would you bring back?
So I nodded at Visions of Grandeur because I have very fond tech memory days of trying to help growers try to figure out how to grow that plant. But grown well, it's beautiful. I actually like a variety called Solstice, which was late from in the Ecchi assortment. It was a beauty. And then Chianti. I loved Chianti also.
All right. Yeah. How about you, Gary? Nobody's mentioned St. Louis yet. How about that?
I know. I'm going to go back to the revolution of Hag and Hag Top White. Top White Hag was a radically breakthrough variety in the fact that it branched and it was the whitest thing we'd ever seen up to that point. So there were two really special things about it. So to me, I'm going to go all the way back to Hag Top White.
All right. Is there, Rebecca, a poinsettia you wish had never been bred?
Oh, gosh. No, because I thought about this one a long time. We learn something from every variety that's on the market, and we almost every variety feels some kind of market demand, whether it's large or small, right? So the one thing I would say, though, is, we're excited about a lot of these glitter types and things, but stock plant management is difficult. And sometimes it doesn't matter how many times you tell customers, retailers, et cetera, this has a high reversion rate. This is what it's going to do. They don't hear it. They don't listen. And so we kind of set unrealistic expectations sometimes. And, I think some of these glitter types, it's not very economical for the stock, stock production, just to try to keep them true to type. So I think we need to keep working in them, of course, but I do think they're, some of our more challenging varieties.
Gary, you act like a man who has had to deal with the fallout from a poinsettia that didn't deliver all that was promised. Let's put it that way.
I know it's in your portfolio, but Cortez Burgundy.
Oh, geez.
I know.
I suffered with that one as a grower. For many years, Fred Myers, the buyer for Fred Myers for many years, John, if you're hearing me, I apologize, really loved this thing. And so we had to grow lots of it for Freddy's, and it was the one we wrote the most credits on at the store. It was beautiful at the moment and just started to fall apart the second it left the bench.
Yeah, so I would agree with that 100%. And it's actually one that we can't even talk growers through most of the time because it does some weird physiological things and yeah, it's okay. So that's my answer too.
Steve, how about you? You've seen a lot of poinsettias.
Well, my original answer was going down the direction of these poinsettias that had leaf drop and the Angelica, Peter Star. But they played a role, in the market, but they weren't the best post-harvest. And I think we really needed better post-harvest. But I'll probably change to Gary's answer, too. So that's a tough one.
Then you better find me a replacement, Steve.
Yeah, okay.
I can tell you I've been chasing that phantom for my 13 years of working with poinsettia breeding. And I've seen a few things kind of tease you with it, but the reality is that is a wicked difficult color to get stable.
Yep.
And wicked difficult color to have any kind of rack performance at all.
We're not going to see burgundy poinsettias anytime soon, having learned our lesson. Gary, what's
the couple years?
One question, then one more poinsettia. What's the most challenging request you tend to get from growers or from retailers regarding poinsettias?
Who do you want to answer? You want me to go?
Yeah, Rebecca, if you're ready, go for it.
Yeah,
it's out of season blooming. You know, it's like the Valentine's Day timing, the October timing. It's, you know, we've tried it many times and we've shown the concept to retailers many times. And it just is not, it's not easy for growers to do. It's, you know, there's not a lot of varieties that are conducive to that out of season blooming. And again, it just kind of sets unrealistic expectations. I think in a crop where the margins are so low, that's an expensive time to do it. And really kind of a niche market. And, you know, sometimes I just question if it's worth it.
All right. Gary?
Yeah, to that one, I'll just put an anecdote and got a call from a rather major retail merchant on September 20th requesting 30,000 8-inch pink poinsettias and pink pot covers for delivery the second week of October. Just assumed that, you know, the poinsettia, we would have plenty of pink to work with. But I was just like, you know, tell me back in May and I could have probably finagled and convinced enough growers to work with me on the project. But yeah, September 20th, I'm sorry. and of course,
they don't know how the market works.
No was not an option. And so I was like, well, if you really need to poinsettia pink at that point in time, you could take green poinsettias and paint them pink, but that's about as close as we can.
Yeah. Right. I'd have to put a primer down first to get the brand.
We did some tap dance and we found her some pop mums to work with and we moved on. But the bottom line, it was just like Rebecca says, buyers, salespeople for the growers, they don't necessarily recognize or respect the seasonality of what it takes to actually grow a crop. Yeah. And poinsettias is hyper specific to the season.
Yeah, yeah. Now, Steve, I'm going to turn this around a little bit on you because
that's true.
The Ecky Ranch used to have poinsettias available virtually year round, didn't they, in bloom?
They did.
Because I know they got requests from, say, Better Homes and Gardens or somebody. They needed to do a photo shoot in July. I remember back in about 2000 or something, I appeared on a TV show called Way to Grow that was filmed here in Orlando in July or August. And they wanted to talk about poinsettias and the Ecky Ranch shipped some poinsettias out to me to be able to have live blooming poinsettias in Florida in August for this TV set where it's 100 degrees in the shade. So it can be done, right?
Yeah, I think Ecky did it as well as anyone. You know, there's not very many people that finish poinsettias year round, I would say. Only a couple, but Ecky was one of them. The retailers knew it. And actually, I think it became a nice challenger that the group rose to the occasion because Ecky could do it very well. And I think still have the capability of doing it. So if you go to the ranunculus fields, the Ecky run still runs up in the coast, you'll see blooming poinsettias in spring, and it's all coming out of that out of season blooming is what we called it. So
there you go. So the art has not been lost yet. That's pretty
No, cool. It hasn't been lost. Catherine's still there.
Last poinsettia question. So. It's a big one. Rebecca, we'll start with you. Ladies first, the best poinsettia of all time.
You had to start with me. I guess for me, I'm going to say Prestige. And really, it's just, I mean, it kind of revolutionized what the expectations were in terms of reduced stem breakage and, you know, checking all the boxes. For me, that's just, I learned about poinsettia production the most. Those were like really formative years for me when we were, you know, introducing Prestige. And so, you know, for me, that's why I'm going to say prestige.
A little bit of a soft spot for it too, right?
Yeah, a little bit, a little bit.
That's nothing wrong with that. Nothing. That's why I still bring up V10 Amy for Pete's sake. Gary, how about you? Best point setter of all time.
I can't argue with prestige. It revolutionized the concept of habit and durability that we just didn't think about before. We always kind of knew it was a thing, but when prestige hit the market, it changed the bar. What it did is it drove the entire breeding industry to chase that phantom. And ever since it was launched, the entire breeding industry has been chasing it year after year, bringing in alternatives year after year after year, but never finding anything that is a matched prestige. So its uniqueness, the fact that it changed the industry, you could argue dark red hag with the branching, but I would say prestige came in at a time when the poinsettia breeding industry was expanding and there were more players coming onto the market, and it set for the North American market a standard that we bred to, mm-hmm. we still breed to today. Mm-hmm. So that makes it, to me, the most important variety.
High bar. Steve, give me the last word on.
Well, I mean, it's hard to argue against prestige because it was a good one. It still is. But Freedom also did that in the generation prior. Really took it to a next level as well. It just had some branch breakage issues that Prestige solved. But there's also, Rebecca, Velveteen. What were the other two varieties?
Oh, Red Velvet, Red Velveteen.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, there was a third one.
I think I'm going to make that my best, Chris.
Those were the best varieties for straight-ups, too.
Yeah.
Those were the best for straight-ups, too. Do you remember how beautiful those were?
I know, but Chris, you could do in a variety. In a variety, we could do 1, 2, 3. Okay, early, mid, late. Okay, it's genius. You know, we just need to have that in more varieties. 1, 2, 3. So, anyways, that's what I'm saying. Velveteen.
All right, back to in
Red
do
Velvet.
Do you think we will ever, Steve? Do you think, as a breeder, we will ever see the dominance of one variety like Freedom in its day or Prestige?
Absolutely.
Or the market changed so much that we're always going to be focused on all of these regional and market week timings to where the growers maybe gotten too sophisticated to just grow one thing. What do you think?
It needs a leap, you know? So the question is it possible to create a leap again in poinsettia? And I know in reviewing for this, I mean, even Gary had some neat things. We had to remember that 50% of a decision on what variety to grow actually happens because of supply chain, production, grower attributes, okay? And so I know there's some chase on, you know, do we have to pinch the poinsettia in the future and do we have to do other things? So there's going to be a leap, in my opinion, that is created through time, and we will have dominance again.
So maybe the market will change, and that will bring a varietal change that will fit a new variety.
Could be.
All right.
Yeah.
We could go on for another couple hours, I think, and I skimmed over a couple of spots, but I don't think we left anything out. If we did, I hope that we could put some information in here where you can contact me, and I'll send a note to these guys asking for your particular market need out there if you're not in Miami or Fairbanks or South Dakota. Maybe we can hook you up. Until then, I want to thank Rebecca, Gary, and Steve for taking the time to share their tremendous, more than 100 years of expertise. And I learned a lot. And I'm glad I'm not growing poinsettias now. It's complicated. For all my guests, I'm Chris Beatty saying thanks for watching.